Welcome everyone to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly leadership forum. Today we are excited to have Samir Arora. Samir is an American entrepreneur, inventor, and investor. He is best known as a veteran of Apple and a serial founder, investor, and CEO in Silicon Valley with a passion to lead teams of incredible people to perform the impossible. He is listed as one of the 100 internet pioneers, along with Tim Berners-Lee, Mark Andreessen, and others, and as the 21 people that shape the World Wide Web at the first Web Innovator Awards by CNET. So he's there at the beginning, I guess that means, what all that means. He currently is the founder and group CEO of Sage Digital Corporation and serves as a managing partner of the venture firm Information Capital. At Sage Digital, Samir is building a platform for experts, publishers, and businesses. Sage Plus for Experts is currently an invite-only platform for experts, talent, and celebrities and their teams. He'll tell us much more about that in our talk, which I'm excited about. Samir has frequently been featured and quoted over the years, including on the cover of Mac Week, Mac World, Ad Week, Folio, Business Week, The Wall Street Journal, and several times in the New York Times, Fortune, Forbes, Newsweek. I want to welcome Samir. I really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you, Sue. Really happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much. I also want to let you guys know that, I just wanted to, full disclosure here, that Samir and I know each other for a while now, actually. So I'm really, I consider him a friend, and I am always interested in hearing what his latest venture is, because he's always up to something. So I wanted to have him on this month, particularly before we end our series this year on AI, because I think he's really using AI here in a really interesting way. So I wanted to make sure we had a chance to talk with him. So I always start out these talks with telling us about your personal journey, because I read your bio, which is all very interesting, but I'd like you to talk with us a little bit about a story or two that tells us about your personal journey and particularly how you got your start in technology.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Sue, and welcome everybody. I think for me, my journey really started first from my family, where we have many, many generations of entrepreneurship, and I was one of the first people to actually not work in the family business and pursued both a career in the arts as well as in technology. At a very young age, I was invited to be a member of a theater, music, and TV series company that gave me a pretty strong footing in the performing arts as well as writing and producing, and with a special kind of focus on design, something that's a theme that's played in my whole life. At the same time, I always loved technology, and through the early days of the personal computer kits, started to build those and then self-taught to start doing programming. And my transition really to technology started through an article I read by Professor John McCarthy, who was at that time at Stanford here in California, and wrote a very small paper called Lisp, a language for AI, which and he's known as probably the father of the term AI, as well as all the growth that's happened through it. And the idea was very simple, that instead of telling computers what to do, what if we had a function where, through programming and technology, you could have a program that could evaluate what to do, and that eval became kind of the heart of it. And from then on, my career path changed completely, technology first, where with a continued focus on art and design throughout my career. I joined Apple in the early days. My first Apple computer was really not an Apple II. It was Lisa, and then worked here in Cupertino, and then had the fortune of also working for Apple for a number of years in international, and also lived in Paris for Apple. And since then have really focused on building platforms that bring this notion of deep technology and how it can really affect people and businesses, and kind of the magic when technology really advances yet is really simple to use. So that's
right,
a very
right.
quick summary of my path from the beginning
that's
to
great.
Now.
Yeah, that's, I like the stories. I'm going to go off script here a second, and I want to ask you a question about creativity, because I do consider you, you know, one of the creatives around walking around here, and I'm wondering, when did you know that you were different in that you were creative? I'm sure it was before you went and worked at Apple, but when did you get that notion that we're always talking about, in our work, we're talking about creativity and we're trying to teach creativity, and I think it definitely can be taught, but I also think that you somewhere along the line figured that out. So talk to us a little bit about that.
I think it's a really good question. So I don't have a formal memory of actually separating creating or creativity from just, my being. I would say it's a skill I've practiced since a very young age. So if I look back to even as early as, 6 to 8 years old, I was already studying music and creating music and writing music. So I was studying as a composer. So I think my grounding in creativity comes from writing as well as composing music. And also, I was always a very curious child in terms of building things with my hands, which I consider a form of creativity. But one idea that comes to my mind hearing your question is, this notion of music composition or writing either stories or, in my case, plays. There's a notion of you approach something based on ideas, you create, and you kind of go into this process of working and recreating till you get it complete. So I think that's the grounding of at least my style of creativity, which is very idea-based. In terms of building something very big and then pursuing that with this process of actually very formal process now of actually working on big ideas over a large number of, large number of years.
Cool. One of the terms we use in creativity work is the idea of borrowing. When you say recreating, is that recreating like as an editing what you already have and iterating, or is it more borrowing or both?
I think the word I use, which is very similar to the notion you're talking about, is I'm a pretty big believer of knowledge and knowledge as a hierarchical knowledge base that we learn from. I'm someone who's always loved books. No matter how many places I've lived and homes I've had, I tend to bring my books with me, which is, in the thousands, sometimes more than that. So I think I grew up with this notion that you really, you both inherit, which is this idea of borrowing, yet you, from inheriting, also create something new, and that then gets added into history. So this notion of iterating actually is both. It's actually looking at where things are and finding, what I call the big ahas are usually things that have not been invented before, that are based on the work of a lot of people. And then from there on, lots of people can use it. So one example of that is while I was at Apple, I was working on the future of navigation, which was not a term that was used pre-internet web, as we all know. It was there was a few people working on that, which led me with my team to create one of the first website builders. In fact, at that point, even the term website was not much being used. It was just a home page of text. So here, I can look back and say there was a pretty big change that occurred of a new idea, which is a notion of a website as opposed to just a page you could link to with text. And, that also resulted in a number of patents led by me gained, which then many people built on and created incredible technology. So I think this continuous loop of knowing what's there yet building something new and creating comes from that notion of, borrowed history and the knowledge of the giants we stand on.
Yeah, I like that because you're using a little different words, create, recreating, inheriting, and I'm always interested in kind of how people feel into this because it really is very much, it's not just in your head, obviously, it's a body thing, so I'm listening intently to your words. So let's talk about AI a little bit. I want to talk a little kind of generally about AI, I mean, small subject, about how you see, sort of philosophical, how you see AI, you know, helping business. I just listened yesterday to McKinsey talk about it, you know, so analytically about how do you incorporate AI into a business and how it's important to have translators. And I think I love that word because I think that's really what it's going to take. It's like a new language. So I kind of want to get your opinion about how AI can help businesses to better understand their customers' needs, and specifically, so we're looking at a particular aspect of it, and then I want to get into like what Sage Digital is doing and how you're using AI. And so let's start with sort of the bigger picture and how you see it, AI really changing. I mean, I think it's already, you know, changing the world in terms of how we're targeting things like that. But let me see. Let me
For
hear
sure.
How you feel about it. Yeah.
So look, I'll start off with just a joke, which is, you know, if you've been in AI long enough, which, you know, if you look at John's paper was in the 1960s when he started using and coined the term artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's lots of examples like Turing tests and things that have happened along the way. But the joke on the technology, on the deep technology side is, you know, AI actually stands for always impossible. So... which kind of explains, you know, that this is a term that goes, you know, in and out of vogue with a lot of people, and rightfully so, very afraid of its implications.
Mm-hmm,
and, you know,
mm-hmm.
if we separate out what AI stands for, you know, non-Terminator movies and stuff like that, and just really look at from a continuum, right? We the visuals are just fantastic when you use this term. The way I look at it is it's the continuum of this incredible technology that has been created by both technology programmers and designers and artists, you know, that have allowed us to be on this continuum. So starting with just the notion of a computer, the notion of being able to, you know, program the computer to build applications, the notion of applications that can be used for productivity, like, you know, word processing and desktop publishing and Excel, et cetera, to this notion of actually it's a tool that allows us to communicate and connect socially as well as through other means to a form for business, not only to communicate, but to actually have information and data about your business and your customers and your products. So mm-hmm. I see that as a continuum where the actual technology is, from what I see is there's usually a 7 to 12 year cycle in Silicon Valley, at least, that enough new technology breakthroughs occur which allow a new class of applications and platforms. So
mm-hmm.
what we're seeing right now is through this, you know, at least three cycles of those 12 years of technology, we're beginning to have, you know, enough tools and price points available that we can do fairly complex things which were not possible to do in the past. And I put AI in that domain. Now, within it, more specifically, most of AI projects fall into either rules-based, which is, you know, from a complexity perspective, very simple or simplistic, but can be, you know, fairly involved in terms of, you know, describing exactly how your business operates to do parts of it, to forms of machine learning in which we mm-hmm. actually have a process to use machines to learn. And then finally, to get to the higher level from machine learning to, you know, the kind of unsupervised machines through learning that can actually, you know, do what's the beginning of the third stage of AI. So I'm a big believer that actually it doesn't matter whether it's a, you know, simple rules-based or very advanced. They're all a part of a whole that is adding, you know, this in this phase some incredible ways to use things that were not possible to do before. So, if you start with that, from a business perspective, there's just things, and I think the word that I use a lot is, technology should be smarter and also more transparent, right? Which is this notion of do things I really need, and yet, don't be creepy about it, right? And I think AI has a real, ethical heritage where people have to actually very carefully choose, the ethics behind what they're doing. But there's some simple things like, if you watch Netflix and Netflix gives you a view for you versus, someone actually is spying on your email and is using that for spam, the technologies they're both maybe using may be identical. But the end result is one is really useful for you or can be, and the other one is far more than creepy all the way to, misuse of this power for things. So to me, it's not the technology that is, the issue. It's actually what people choose to do with it. You can use almost any tools for good or bad, and AI falls to me in that category.
So in regard to this idea of how businesses are going to use it for customer needs, I mean, the obvious one is targeting, you're on Google and all of a sudden you have my latest shoe purchase that shoe is already up on the ad, right? They're obviously targeting my shoe problem. Anyway, obviously that's been going on for a long time, but some of that's good. I mean, it's convenient. I mean, I can see how Amazon particularly, who really is leading AI as far as, because they have hordes of people working on this, but how they can target your needs and where you don't even have to almost, eventually, I mean, not very far off, you're just going to, whatever you're purchasing, they're just going to have to purchase it for you, essentially, because they know what you're going to purchase before you even are going to purchase it. So I guess, in some regards, that's good because it's efficient, but it's also I don't think it's unethical because you're giving people information, but it could also be a little bit controlling, how do you see the way we're using data, which some of which is private, in targeting people's preferences?
I think that's probably the, heart of this issue, which is if we establish that AI is, in a continuum of new tools and technologies that are going to evolve, then with that comes this notion of that, okay, well, what are the use cases of it, like the ones you mentioned, and are they, good for people, not good for people? Are they being misused, or as I say very simply, just creepy? So it's very interesting. Let's take an example, some examples. One is, overtly, buying something, for example, on an Amazon. And by overt, I mean you've actually taken an action. It's your account. You would like Amazon to remember what you purchased and not like so many other websites where you come back, they have no idea who you were.
You can't
or
remember
even if
what
you did.
Yeah, what you liked.
And there's just not enough purchases on individual e-commerce vendors that they can actually aggregate that for you as a consumer to say, by the way, you actually shop for food and you shop for electronics and you shop for shoes. There's actually something in common that the you is in common across these, right? Which puts, as I believe, Amazon in a very strong position
to actually be
of service to people because you're willingly giving them and purchasing from them, remarkable insight of your past, at least, of purchase behavior. Now, that's very different from, if you're in a map product and, now do you want your location always to be tracked? Do you know if the applications are tracking it? If you take someone like an Apple, it's very, very clear that they want you to know. They want to ask you every single time. So there's ways to deal with these things in which if there's any doubt that something is happening without the consumer's consent, that there's ways you can involve the consumer and the user in the process so they feel that there's a, you know, that this is at least, you know, you were asked. So I think with that continuum, my sense is as data of you, you actually, you know, I just put myself, I asked the question, what would I want, you know, that would actually be helpful? And what I see is a lot of times leaders don't ask that question. They end up in places where they're leading, they're doing great things, they're leading companies, but they somehow forget. And it's very easy, actually, to, you know, touch a business and know, you know, is, are the leaders of this business actually using this service or product? Because if they would, for example, they would never fly their own airline, as an example, right? That's an example that comes up a lot. So I think if you start from that, maybe the question would be, if I was a consumer of a business and we had a mutually, you know, respectful and happy relationship, what would it be? And what do I want the business to know about me? How best can they serve my future needs? And what options can they provide to me that would make my life a lot easier, happier, or discover things I would never discover? So to me, that's the exciting part of AI, which is, you know, if we start from the notion of, you know, okay, I give my preferences based on what I bought, but that's so much, you know, about you is not captured that, which is you're also, you know, a person in a relationship, you are social, you have a circle of influencers, you are also people, you know, maybe brands or people or products you like and love. What I see is this other part of, you know, our socially connected being has really not been captured well because it was just too difficult to. But in real life, you know, there must be someone or there may be someone you talk to when you're looking for books versus a tastemaker. And I think you're one of those where, you know, you would know more about food choices and other, you know, recommendations because that's something you love to do. The internet has not done a good job of capturing that, and that creates a big loss, which is we're not bringing the way we love to live in real life to technology. And I think AI and technology will play a great role in those preferences going forward.
Interesting. Okay. So let's before I go to – I want to get some folks to jump in here, but before I do that, I want to ask you the question about your business. So I want you to talk about a little bit about how you decided to create Sage Digital, and then tell us what it is, and then I'd like you to talk about like how you're using AI, like how does it how is it going to work? I know you're starting out with having the experts first, and before you go to the client, the customers, I guess you could call them. So talk to us a little bit about that, and then we'll take a little break.
Great. So let's start with, you know, like most things, where did the idea start from? So in our case, you know, if I look at my history, I actually remember the exact moments of all the really big ideas that I've been around or I've heard for the first time, you know, whether they're invented by us, me or my team or us together, or they've come from someone else. And Sage is one of those where we were in a meeting specifically in 2014, talking about an alarming trend back then of fake news coming from Eastern Europe, and having a conversation about fast forward, how would we be able to participate in, I was running a large content media company at that time with creators, to be able to just differentiate what pieces of content were real and which weren't, which is an incredibly important conversation, especially right now.
Obviously, right now. Right.
And it was, you know, it was like someone just turned a switch on, by the way, which was within 6 months, suddenly we started to see enormous amount of fake content, news, reviews coming from Eastern Europe in 2014. So we were not, and, you know, I've not run businesses in the news space, but if you take, you know, not the first two pages of New York Times of news, but the rest, which is the, you know, lifestyle part of the newspaper, is a business I've been involved with fairly deeply more than a decade. So what we did was we basically built this notion of, okay, fast forward, how would we detect that? And the idea that came from that, because a simple idea was, which is a founding principle of SAGE, is it's a lot easier to determine content being real or fake if you start with the source of the content. So if you can actually verify the source of the content, you would have a much higher likelihood of knowing the content than you would if you had just a piece of, you know, a review or a piece of content, and then you would say, is this real? And especially if a machine is writing that piece of content, a machine could not be easily used to determine if it's real or fake. So we started
That's
with the idea, could we actually find the actual experts, writers, journalists, celebrities, everyone who's real, and start this notion of having at least verified sources. The aha that occurred in this meeting was when the company we were working with, the person in the meeting said, why don't we do this for location-based content first? So the beautiful part about that idea is, on our own, we would not have come up with that. It actually required someone else to look at that and go, this is huge, but instead of doing all of news, why don't you just first do location-based? And I left that meeting, and I knew this was a very, very big idea, and it was, you know, transformational in terms of what would happen in the world over time. So that's what SAGE is about. SAGE's root is, you know, very simple. The two notions put together, which is that, you know, great content comes from, you know, sources that spend an enormous amount of time building themselves in their profession. And that is lost in many ways because you have this, you know, large volume of, you know, social posts all the way to fake news, all the way to fake reviews. You could even go on eBay a few years ago and just buy, you know, 50 or 100 fake reviews for your business. So this is a fairly broken system, and our goal was to solve it. So where AI comes in is if we were going to solve this for, let's say, 100 experts and say we're going to find 100 known people or, you know, publications like the New York Times, it's actually relatively easy to do because it's a small number. But if you want to extrapolate that and say we'd like to create this for all the users, all the experts of the whole world around locations, that's something that's never been done before. So what SAGE has done actually is created a platform that is global in which experts with domain expertise around location-based businesses and products and services can be added. The AI actually helps them and helps us create this incredible platform where, you know, if you were to give a simple example, if the internet and search is based on all content, then social media or something like a Facebook or Instagram is based on a filter based on your social connections or friends or followers. We've created the third layer of the internet, which is a filter based on which pieces of content are actually coming from legitimate, verified sources, experts, celebrities, or tastemakers.
And this, and then the idea, if I could extend this, if you could talk a little bit about the why. So you have this invite-only platform for these taste. I like tastemakers. I like that a lot. For the purposes of travel and et cetera, could you talk a little bit about the application?
Yeah, so once you have the platform basis in place, then we have to choose where would we apply it to.
Right,
and because we chose location-based as our first kind of anchor, and startups don't always do that. We did. You know, so it's a platform which is wide, but it's very focused around locations. The best use of locations, as you are suggesting, are in travel, are in things to do, food, it's in experiences. So that's really the application of the SAGE platform today is if you start with the notion that every piece of content that we would add, which is, let's say, you know, a shop all the way to a business, all the way to an experience that someone is offering, was only added and only is added into SAGE once a known verified expert actually talks about it. And, you know, our worry was, well, you're going to end up with a few thousand experts and, you know, 10,000 or a few thousand places, but that wouldn't actually make an impact to the whole world. And what we've seen is an enormous increase. It was very slow in the beginning. We went from 100 to 1,000 to about 10,000 experts, and then that started to grow. We are now at over 200,000 expert sources. And the miracle that happened was we went from, you know, 1,000 experts talking about, you know, 10,000 places to 200,000 experts that have talked about almost 5 million places, which is a very large data base of places that our expert like recommend globally. So, you know, at this point, what I would say is we're probably at more than half of all the major locations of the world that people want to know about, probably 60-65%. And at this rate, we'll probably reach a number in which, you know, we'll have enough places in the major regions first, that it's an incredibly different list. And it's very, you know, it's just difficult to gain, because you can't get up one day and say, well, actually, I'm really an expert. Expertise is something you develop over time.
Wow. Okay. Let's stop for a second. And, you know, if you've got a question or a comment for Samir, just come in and say your name and then your question. Anybody have a question or a comment?
Samir, this is Rochelle McRowell. Thank you.
Hey Rochelle.
For your presentation. And I do have a question. Can you see this type of work that you're doing applicable to the nonprofit sector? And if so, how?
Thank you, Rochelle. Yes, it's actually a really good question. I would say, you know, depends on the types of nonprofits, right? So if you're in the space where you have a list of people that you work together as a team, or you create or curate or contribute things together, the platform is very applicable regardless of if you're a for-profit or not-for-profit. What it's really good for is it has a builder, and it also has tools to manage a community on top of this platform. So what that allows you to do is to actually enable ways your community can come together closer towards you as a nonprofit, that is deeply assisted by this notion of, you know, verified sources as well as tools that are built on AI to help you. So I would say the for-profit or not-for-profit does not matter at all. It's the use of this in applications. If you are trying to create channels or applications around your nonprofit, then SAGE as a platform would be beneficial to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rochelle. So, Samir, right now what your focus is obviously going from, you know, 10,000 to 200,000 experts, which is amazing, and then the idea of talking about 5 million places, so that's, you're going to keep on that course. So what's the next step as far as when those of us who are wanting to go to those places get to use the information?
Yeah, really good question. So what we did is we launched a for experts and tastemakers only access a few months ago, and have been building the actual tools to not only have the AI and the data, but if you look at my background, I tend to build creative platforms, you know, starting, you know, early days at Apple to, you know, website publishing to also helping manage Ning, which was Marc Andreessen and Gina's company for building, you know, social, your own social networks. I tend to build platforms that you know, people can use to create and express and, you know, and have a community around their content or their business. So what we're doing now is actually completing those tools out where it is very, very simple. And the way I look at this is it's kind of the next evolution of your, you know, website meets, you know, your social meets your actual business of that you're in. So once that is done, which is in you know, very little time at this point, we're almost at the end of that process. The results of all of these are the channels or the applications that the experts, celebrities and influencers or businesses are building on Sage then become available to consumers either as topical channels or as a platform that is more regionally based or map-based. So that's the obvious outcome of the experts using the platform, and it's fantastic. So I can give you some examples. You know, we have people all the way in Tokyo, for example, today where, you know, there's not only experts adding content, but then there's people seeing what happens if we, you know, actually try to use this to find things. And the universal answer we get is it takes two or three times for someone as an expert to see this to realize, wow, you know, there's no fake accounts. All the people who are actually adding this content are real, like me.
So yeah, they're legit. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It actually creates a peer group, which we weren't expecting, where
Kind of like Airbnb.
Have a communication. Yeah,
go ahead. Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm sorry. It's reminding me of the way I feel when I'm on Airbnb. There is a bit of, and different from VRBO, in that there is, because of the verification, there is a little bit of, okay, this is a little bit more legitimate, you know? And especially, you know, the Superhost situation, you know, again, more legitimacy. They're more of an expert in terms of throwing out their homes and things like that. But, yeah, I think the verification is, you look at other companies like, you know, just like PayPal, and this risk is everything, really.
Absolutely.
And
you know, look,
and,
in some
yeah.
businesses, like in the entertainment space, you have tools like IMDb Pro, which at least list who you are professionally. We don't have that in most businesses, right? You don't have a place to go and actually see, you know, other than a profile on LinkedIn or something, but there's no community around this verification process. So what we're finding now is the first use of whichever profession you're in around location-based businesses, knowing that you are with your peer group, And it's a verified peer group, is actually a fantastic, you know, professionally and social side effect of what we've built.
Right.
The second part
right.
is you can then, to the previous question by Rochelle, you can actually use that to invite people to contribute and collaborate with you that may not be working for you directly, which is where of this notion of a shared interest come in, which is how we live in real life, right? Whatever we are passionate about, we actually connect to people around those points of passion. And then the third one was your question, which is once you do that, where you are working with your own team, you're working with your extended list of people that actually you would like to communicate and collaborate with, but normally you can't, the end result for a user as a consumer is enormous, because you're almost like, you know, going to a location or a topic and, you know, borrowing the wisdom of the experts in that, you know, community, region, or area of expertise. And it's incredible what that does in terms of the end results of that that's based on this good, you know, solid, deep principles.
Well, and also the 200,000 people that is probably going to end up being, you know, a lot more, also would that peer effect of them using each other. I mean, like, these people are all traveling. They're going to use each other's expertise more than they would go outside of it. So you've already created that tribe too.
Absolutely. And I think this notion of, you know, joining tribes or being able to find them even, you know, whatever you care about, technology has not done a good job of bringing us closer together in that regard. We are traveling more than ever. We're, you know, our circles of work have grown more than ever. but we're still very disjointed. And I think one of the biggest reasons is because of this lack of trust in the system of, you know, is this a safe place where verified
mm-hmm.
experts and people are actually there together?
Right.
So it's very exciting. It's actually really amazing. You know, you build things and you know, and you have a notion of, you know, who you have designed it for. And the magic occurs when people start doing things with it that you had not envisioned, but is really, you know, deeply trying to solve their needs, you know, and
right.
and desires.
Well, it sounds, it's very impressive, and I'm glad we could have something specific in terms of how people are using AI for good. So thank you so much, Samir. How do people get a hold of you? You're probably more stealth at this point. Do you have? I know you don't have a website for users yet, but do you have anything that we can look forward to that people can at least wait for, or some sort of email or website or Instagram or anything?
Yes. So, you know, because of my heritage from Apple, we don't say actually anything at all till we have something to say.
Sure.
So we, you know, in this case, largely because of the amount of technology and work required to build a platform and, you know, and actually build the data, then build the platform, and now build the actual builder so you can create applications on it.
Sure.
We're now coming to the end of that. So what people can do, whether you're an expert or a user or you're a person who could have expertise, is just go to our website, which is sage.biz, or
right.
to the actual product website for experts, which is sageplusforexperts.com.
Yeah.
And there's in both of those, it directs you to a place where you can register yourself for early access.
Okay.
And as
okay.
we start rolling this out, that's the list we're going to start, you know, from. So, yes, there's a way for you to know what we're building, when it will be
sure.
available, or if you have projects that you want to build on it. We are definitely for experts working directly to build some really incredible applications of this platform that we've built.
Sounds great. So sage.biz and then sageplusforexperts.com, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Samir. I greatly appreciate your wisdom. It's always interesting to talk with you, and I really appreciate it. So thanks again.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thank mm-hmm. you. And let me just talk a little bit about next time we meet up, everybody. We always take December off, and so we'll be back with you in January, on January 23rd, 2020. I can't believe we're saying 2020. That's amazing. At 2 p.m. with Dr. Daphne Scott, who is the author of Waking Up a Leader, 5 Relationships of Success. So here's what we're doing next year. We always have a theme for the year. This year has been, of course, AI and social, AI and ethics. And next year it's called, get this, everybody, De-stressing in a Fucked Up World. We're actually going to say it. Because next year is like a very important year, and it's pretty complicated. And I think they were all stressed out. So, of course, going and traveling and to these amazing places that you're creating with your expert Samir, it will be one way you could de-stress, for sure. But we're going to be talking to a lot of stress experts about how we can kind of get through some of these complications and these complexities in this world that we're living in right now. All right, so join us on the 23rd of January, 2 p.m. We'll have that information out to you, of course, beginning of January. Thanks again, Samir, and thanks, everybody, to be on the call. Bye now.